Well, welcome to the BYU Management Society Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankham.
And I'm Randy Garn.
And I'm Ahmed Corbett.
And I'm Scott O'Neill.
And the guest of honor.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
Each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
And if your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to contact you. And each time we do one of these interviews, I'm so excited for the opportunity. I feel like I learn more than anyone by virtue of the chance to listen to each of our amazing guests. And today is certainly no exception. We have the amazing opportunity to meet with Scott O'Neill. Scott is one of the most recognized, connected, and dynamic executives in the sports and entertainment industry today. He has more than 25 years of experience leading NBA, NHL, and NFL teams and leagues, including the National Basketball Association, formerly the Philadelphia 76ers, New York Knicks, New Jersey Nets, Philadelphia Eagles, New York Rangers, and New Jersey Devils. His mission to build innovative, inspiring, socially impactful, and high-performing teams and business organizations has earned him a reputation as a leader of leaders. A Harvard Business School-educated CEO, Scott contends that fostering a corporate culture founded in respect, diversity, employee development, and corporate social responsibility is what drives the success of the award-winning sports teams and businesses he oversees. These awards include Fast Company's Most Innovative Company, Entrepreneur Magazine's Top 50 Cultures, Sports Innovation Lab's Top 25 Most Innovative Professional Teams in the World, and many others. The most admired CEO from the Philadelphia Sports Business Journal has been named to lists that include the 100 People of Power and Influence, multiple Power 100 lists, Philadelphia Business Journal, Philadelphia Magazine, and more. A decade-long member of the NBA and NHL Board of Governors, O'Neill's insights on the sports industry's ability to move the market has made him a prominent regular voice for Bloomberg, Fox Business, CNBC, CNN, and across global business media. A man of faith and father of three, O'Neill's conviction to lead a perpetually present life as he famously runs to work and runs home guides his commitment to helping others realize their full potential. Scott, thank you. Welcome.
Well, it's wonderful to be here with such an esteemed group. I'm looking forward to getting started and jumping in. I mean, anytime you get a chance to be with the voice of leading saints, it's a humbling opportunity.
I didn't think you'd start with me.
Oh, I'm coming at each of you, one by one. But I will say, I just have to interrupt because we were just at a wonderful lunch together, and my wife said, "Is that Kurt from Leading Saints?" I'm like, "I'll go introduce you, hon." It's, of course, yes, he is the celebrity, and we will bring him over.
Well, we are so blessed to be here today with like you say, some amazing people. And I'm going to let Randy, you know Scott a whole lot better than I do. I'll let you ask the first question, then we'll go to Brother Corbett and around the room here.
I mean, I've got a quick, simple question. But, Scott, when I've met you, like, I just think of high performance. I'd love to know, what are some habits that you really feel have made you excel the way that you have in life?
Well, I think of thank you very much. That's wonderful. Randy, I love you. I think you're incredible. here's what I would tell you. I've seen some characteristics that make people successful, and that's what I'll talk about. I think that, in particular, young people, is one is that you work unreasonably hard. There is no substitute for hard work. You come out of undergrad, even you get your MBA, and you think you're ready to be a CEO, and really the only discernible talent you have is your ability to work unreasonably hard. And so I would always start there as a foundation. The second characteristic, and I learned this from the great, late, great Commissioner David Stern, is to be intellectually curious. And I think that is an impact, you know, that will impact your whole life. The world is changing so fast, and it's so many moving parts. And I think the ability and the interest and the opportunity to just keep on learning and being intellectually curious. My wife is a wonderful example of that as well. She's always, I mean, every day in my text inbox is another talk for me to listen to from her. But David Stern, we would get on a plane, his plane, and first of all, he was a pretty tough guy. It was very, you know, very difficult to work with for a lot of people. So we'd get on a plane and everybody would run to the back. And I just remember being a young kid early in my career, I was 30 years old, and I would just sit right across from him. And I would take the pounding so I could learn from him. But the one kind of powerful thing that he did. We would get on, he was an old school guy, and he'd have a 12-inch stack of ripped out newspaper and magazine articles. And he wasn't just reading about basketball. He wasn't just reading about sports. He wasn't just reading about business. He would be learning about geopolitical situation. He'd be learning about world religion. He'd be learning about life sciences. And I just fast forward to that time when Magic Johnson contracted HIV, and he didn't panic. He used it as an opportunity to change the world because he knew the science. He knew the best doctors in the world. He'd read enough to understand the impact that he could have. And I just think about like the quick transition. You know, I know he had an office. We had an office in Hong Kong in the 80s where the NFL was trying to put a game on 10 years ago and couldn't pull it off. But this is now, it's a multi-billion dollar business there. Why? Why China? Well, there were a billion people there, you know, and he tells this great story of sitting in the CCTV office, their national network, kind of our version of NBC, if you will, and sitting for 6 hours waiting for the head of the station to come see him. This is David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA. So he's a guy who learned and learned and learned and learned and learned. And the last thing would be just being an extraordinary teammate. And I think it's lost on a lot of people. Whether that's, you know, with your family, or that's at church, or whether that's at work, I can tell you when I came into the business, I was, you know, a marketing assistant. And the person to my right ended up being the CEO of the Brooklyn Nets and building the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And the guy to my left, Howie Neuchow, that was Brett Yormark, and the other one, Howie Neuchow, ends up running CAA, one of the, you know, greatest talent agencies in the history of the world. And if I had not been a teammate, and that's very natural for me, it's like, how are you doing? Can I help you? I come from a world of abundance, not scarcity. And if you come from a world of abundance, that's very natural for you, because if it's good for Randy or Brother Corbett, it's good for me. Right? Because I'm rooting for your success, because there's so much opportunity for everybody. So those are my three characteristics.
Beautiful, beautiful statement. I want our listeners to know that we just had this great presentation by Scott in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, the Empire Room, this grand room. And now we're in the President's Room up on the mezzanine level with portraits from Joseph Smith to President Nelson.
It's a hair intimidating.
It's sitting here.
I feel like they're peering through my soul.
You know, that's the image I wanted listeners to have. And then, so, you know, and we're sitting in this circle, and Alexi is over there, and Scott's daughter, and Ken, former pastor, is here with us. So I'm curious, Scott, just in this setting, you joined the church, and as a high profile professional, and you were sealed to your family for time and all eternity. Can you tell us how that feels?
I can, but first I have to say that Brother Corbett and I were most recently cited at a Shake Shack together. So, look, don't let the wonderful conference talk and the beautiful man. I have a great family. Don't look. He still eats Shake Shack burgers. Okay, just so you know, everyone.
Excuse me.
For everybody.
A far cry from the President's Room.
from the
President's Shake Room to Shake Shack.
From the sublime to the ridiculous. Right.
Okay, so I will say this. First of all, being sealed to my family was the single most wonderful day in my life. And I will never forget sitting in that sealing room, kneeling across the altar from Lisa, and this door opens up, and almost surreal to even think about now, but my daughter's all dressed in white, just with the sun on their backs. They look like angels just walking across the room. And it was spectacular. It was beautiful and humbling and wonderful and perfect. You know, if there ever could be a perfect day, that was it for me. Being baptized was amazing. I was baptized by a dear friend of mine who's since passed away, and my most fun memory is this larger than life figure. We met at grad school, and he insisted on practicing in our living room the day before, practicing baptizing me. So he's actually just dropping me on the floor, essentially. And I remember him saying, like, so when we got there, I remember, I was sweeping up the church. I'm not sure how that happened, but I was, you know, in my little jumpsuit. It was a little Euro cut. It was a little tight, to be honest.
White jumpsuit.
White jumpsuit. Mm-hmm. And And in walks my friend Will, and he's in this like beautiful white shirt and white pants. I was like, "Hey, how did this happen? Like, where? Why did I not get a heads up that I could wear that?" You know. And so we get into the baptismal font, and just before he starts the thing, he looks at me. He's like, "I'm going to keep you under there for a little while longer, just in case." And he winks at me. But it was beautiful. It was. You know, I think it was like an old religious revival. I mean, I think we had, you know, the ceremony, I mean, the service afterwards, I think went for almost 3 hours. We had, you know, a dozen speakers of just dear people who had influenced and impacted our lives. And it was wonderful.
I think Elder Vysik Ahema of the 70s.
The great Elder Vysik Ahema was there. He sure was.
Great man.
He and that's how Brother Corbin and I met through Elder Vysik Ahema, who is just is just a wonderful soul. He's like Brother Corbett. I think the leaders of the church today are the right leaders, you know, in the right church at the right time. And I think Elder Vysik Ahema for me represents that. He's everything that's right about the church, and a wonderful, wonderful soul, and even better friend.
That's my view too.
Scott, I'm curious, you know, speaking in the context of making covenants, you know, both at the baptismal font in the temple, how did that impact your professional life? Was there a shift there? I mean, you've been a spiritual, religious individual really your whole life, but did it inform your professional life in a different way?
Well, I was speaking to this church group, and it was a distinguished group, not unlike this, but a little bigger, a lot more people. And someone asked me a very similar question, and I said, other than a few word of wisdom issues, and I winked at the crowd, it didn't go over big. Like, it felt really flat. But I will say that, the delivery was fantastic, and that's what was so disappointing. But I did have a few little tune-ups I had to do on the word of wisdom stuff. But other than that, you know, I've lived a relatively, you know, wholesome spiritual life. So not much changed. Still working on the language thing a bit. I don't know if I can say that given this format here, but you know, I definitely have a, you know, I'm working on that, Brother Corbett. You know, I know
lifetime members.
I know,
but you're a coach. But Scott, you're a coach.
Right. I think I should get it right. You should get a little bit of leeway, for goodness sake. I mean, nobody on Leading Saints has ever said this, and now we're here.
See, but you're learning. You just said, "For goodness sake." That's good.
Okay, I have an awful story. Can I tell it?
Yeah.
Okay, please. So. I'm not a member of the church yet, and but I am always been a huge fan of church ball on Saturday mornings, and and so I'm doing, you know, I am, by the way, when you're not a member of the church, you know, you don't get callings, but you get assignments. So I always had an assignment. You know, I was always around. You know, they always had me doing something, some stake assignments. It was kind of, you know, I was kind of like a, you know, most people thought I was a member of the church, I imagine. So anyway, so we're going for Saturday morning basketball, and my dad was probably 65 at the time. Was in town. He played until he was 70, since passed away. And so I'm taking my dad over there. I say, "Hey, Dad, like, it's a church." He's like, "Yes." I was like, "No, well, Dad, we're playing basketball in a church." He's like, "Yeah, no, I know, I heard you." I was like, "Okay, so, you know, there's some words like you cannot say in a church." Okay, I mean, we know what they are. Like, do we have to go through them? He's like, and he's really stubborn, just crossed his arms, looked at me square in the eye. It's like, "Scott, I'm insulted that you would even bring this up." And I was like, "Well, Dad, like, you know, like, losing, you know, I don't stop. Like, I'm not stopping with him. I know how stubborn he is." I was like, "You know, we don't, you know, you can't use the Lord's name in vain, okay, under any circumstance." He's like, "Seriously? Like, are you really serious?" I'm like, "Yes." So we go and we start playing. First possession, he dribbles off his leg and screams the Lord's name in vain.
It just
goes. And all I go is, I'm like, "Get out. Get out." That's all I can manage, okay? And my friends are playing there, are rolling on the ground. They're like, "It's not funny. This is not funny. Dad, get out. I'm serious. Wait in the car. Out." So I've had my moments.
Yeah. Did he go out?
No, he didn't. And he shot every time he touched the ball for the next 2 hours.
So he not only took the Lord's name in vain, but he was a ball hog on top of it.
It's a tough combination. It really is.
Well, Scott, I know that that our time is short. I wanted to, for my one question, I wanted to just ask you. I know, obviously, things are difficult right now, but they're always difficult And they're more difficult, you know, now than it seems more pronounced. But what would you say to people who might be struggling mentally with any type of emotional disorder? I know that that's something that's near and dear to your heart that you spoke about in our luncheon. And I just, any words of hope or advice?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks. That's such a wonderful question. I would say that, first off, it's going to be okay. That you are not alone. Your Heavenly Father is with you. To not isolate yourself, to make sure you raise your hand and ask for help, to get on your knees and pray, to make sure that you're connecting with people in your life, in and around your life, and that you have and find and can carve out some hope, because it gets better. It always, always gets better. And you know, I often have my youngest daughter, Eliza, sometimes judges her day by the worst 15 minutes. And I think that we can be guilty of that sometimes. And so I would say, if you just pull back that lens a little bit, you know, just pull it back a little bit. You know, sometimes we're so focused on the here and now, whatever that problem is or that issue is or that trouble is, or a relationship that went south or a deal that fell apart, or you got fired from a job, or you made a mistake, you know, kind of word of wisdom, or you you went off course a bit. It's like, it's okay. You're okay. You're going to be fine. Just pull that lens back. See the whole world for what it is. See your whole body of work. See your light and your goodness. And now is a time more than ever that we need to give grace, you know, give grace to yourself, but also give grace to others. I think the hardest thing for a lot of us is to forgive ourselves. And we're not perfect, and we're going to make mistakes, and we're going to go off course. And I have often tell the young men, I have the privilege of working with young men in the church for quite some time, and I always just say, like, it's okay. Like, you are going to be okay. There is nothing you've done that we haven't seen, but you've got to get on your knees and pray, and you have to atone for your sins, and you have to come see me or your bishop or your dad. Like, but just make sure you take care of yourself.
Great advice. I'm going to go off script for a second. I know that we're done, but it's very rare that we have an opportunity to have Brother Corbett with us. I'm going to let you ask Brother Corbett
now we're
any
talking.
Question you would like.
Now we are talking my language.
This is what I'm talking about.
I wouldn't want to move in on his time. This is, I mean, he's in the spotlight. I don't need the spotlight. I say, I'm going to interpret that as, Brother Corbett, do you have another question
yes,
for Scott?
Yes, okay, then we can do that.
That is called pulling rank. That's what we call that in my line of work.
Veto power. That's
called that is military action.
We have
right
time for one more question. It doesn't dodge. Matter which one.
The quick dodge. No, I just... thank you for your... You're a veteran now in the church, and... what would you say to those who are thinking about the church, who are considering it, who have their own traditions that they've grown up with, and maybe parents and family? What counsel would you have for them?
Well, I would love to think about how members of the church, active members of the church, can think about how we might be more welcoming to those who might be investigating.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd like to explore a little bit with you. We have such incredible community. And I oftentimes find that some of our best strengths are oftentimes our Achilles heel. So we have such incredible norms and mores, and they're wonderful, and they can also be some of our Achilles heels. And so I would say that that we need to branch out a bit. You know, and it's wonderful that you've gone to dinner with members of your ward every week for the last 40 weeks. And that is wonderful that you have connections and family. But we need to sometimes get out of our little bubbles and out of our shells. I think there are opportunities for us to talk about the church and talk about the gospel. I think we have to move away from some of the strong secular norms of this church and continue to talk about our Savior and talk about the power that we've been vested with. I think that we have this special opportunity to lean on what's right. I think that, you know, I get the sense that the rising generation is not oftentimes buying what we're selling. And when I am talking to young folks from 17 to 23, I talk about them committing to that foundation. I call it the core four. And, but like, what is your core four? What do you actually lean on and believe in? Like, do you believe Jesus Christ is your Savior? That's a yes or no question, okay? And that's an easy one for just about everybody, right? Yes, I believe. Do you believe Joseph Smith was a prophet? Yes, easy one to believe in. Do you believe the Book of Mormon is true? Yes, I do. Like, do you believe we have a living prophet? Yes. Those four for me, okay, and you might have a different four, okay? But what are those four things that you believe, and they become your foundation and your rock? And no matter what happens, no matter what talk is delivered at BYU, or no matter what position is taken on so-and-so or whatever, what letter comes out or what person says the wrong thing, like, focus on the beauty of this gospel and the power of this gospel. And I believe, and you guys will know the actual words much better than I am, but the first page of the Book of Mormon says, you guys know what it says?
Have been born in goodly parents?
No, before that. Essentially says, like, hey, any mistakes in here are of men.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. We overlook that sometimes, right? Yeah. But like, so what I want to believe in is the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the power. That's the foundation. And so my long-winded answer to your short question is one is we can be better. We, members of this church, and we can do better. We can reach out and we can serve those. Not with a Machiavellian end to bring them into this church, because they're coming in this life or the next. We know that. But I think we can be good examples. I think we can help people recognize and realize what that core foundation is and what that strength is that's going to carry us forward. And then we can go serve. You know, a good friend of mine once said, he said, you know, if Jesus were on this earth today, we wouldn't be sitting in church. We'd be out serving. I was like, well, you know, let's put the 2 hours in and then go serve, you know. And I really believe that. I think we can put the 2 hours in and then go serve.
Scott, you're amazing. Thank you so much. And Brother Corbett, Randy, sure appreciate you being with us today. Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next month with another episode of our Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast.